You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Drop it in the center.
McCoy just came from the Batman.
Unbelievable!
Madas!
Not as possibly bleak as this.
Drogba!
Madas! Never ended up in McDonald's. And I haven't had a trophy in long time. What the fuck did I think?
Okay, welcome to another episode of Chessy Hour. I'm joined by Babs. What are you saying, Babs?
I'm good, bro. I'm trying to become a regular again, you know. Feeling good to be back home. There's no place like home.
Back home. This is your training ground, man.
Exactly, man.
You've
exactly.
Got to keep sharp. And then we've got Buzzy. What are you saying, Buzzy?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good. I feel like, Buzzy, with the new owners, I feel like you're becoming more important to give us that American point of view. You
know? Got to be the liaison, right?
Yeah. Cool. So we are off the back of, who did we play yesterday? We played Leeds yesterday. Obviously, we're towards the end of the season. Essentially, top four should have been wrapped up, but we've made it, in true Chelsea fashion, we've made it difficult. We were playing Leeds. Like I said, we've got American owner, but also we have Pulisic starting for us. And the team we were facing against had an American coach. First time in, apparently, Premier League history, of course, because it's the first time we've got an American coach, I think. Klinsmann was a coach, wasn't he? It's first time where we had an American player face off against an American coach. But anyway, we play Leeds and Arsenal smashed them. However, with a caveat, they had a man sent off in that match. And with Leeds, they work so hard. And so going into the match, was anyone worried? Because it seems like, to be fair, and with good reason, even against a Leeds that is in the relegation zone, we can't be confident as Chelsea fans at this point. So Buzzy, over to you. What were your thoughts, man?
Yeah, I mean, given our recent form, I was basically taking no result for granted at this stage, especially when a team has something to fight for. Luckily, it didn't stay too nervy for long, given that's an early goal, great strike, and them getting a man sent off kind of killed any fear I had. You still, though, even then, I will say, down to 10 men and up a goal, because of how we've been playing lately, there was still a little bit of that, like, are we going to figure out a way to blow this? Like, are they going to score a late goal because we can't get a second? But we got a second. We eventually got a third. It was no sweat in the end.
Forgive my memory, but who did we play before? It was two goals up. And then, no, it wasn't long ago. It was two goals up and then they came back.
Wolves last game. Yeah.
So this is why we couldn't be comfortable. Babs, quickly on the Leeds game, was you fearing it?
You know, I had a bad feeling. Which I said in the group chat, and it wasn't about the game in general.
Yeah,
and obviously we saw the Kovacic thing, but in terms of playing Leeds, I wasn't too worried because I know they've shipped the most amount of goals this season. Okay. You know, after yesterday, what, 77 goals? So surely we're gonna eat somehow. You know, surely we're gonna eat somehow. But it was just about, you know, remaining resolute and not fumbling like we did against United and we did against Wolves. And we did against Everton. So making sure that we broke that that chain, because what is after that, that's what the, I think that's the first time this season we've gone three games without a win, if I'm correct in thinking. Ooh. But
yeah,
obviously you wouldn't want to really go any longer than that. So I was pretty confident that we wouldn't let it go that much longer.
It got to the point where I was starving for a win. Like, it felt like we didn't know how to win anymore. And it's crazy that three games will do that to you. But off the back of the game, one of the big conversations is, so we've kind of held slappings recently to Arsenal, to Brentford. And I think, what was the game? Was it Everton? That Jorginho came off and then we conceded the goal. So a lot of people like to do what I think can be a lazy thing in terms of saying, if Jorginho played those games, then we wouldn't have been slapped. So I want to kind of have a conversation over Jorginho. And because I think coming into the match, Tuchel did mention it, saying he wanted to play Jorginho to help us with a counter-attack because he thinks that he's someone that is an organiser. And then I think after the game, there were some words from Tuchel about Jorginho as well being organising. And again, the narrative from the Jorginho, the J5 Hive, was that, see, told you so. When Jorginho's playing, we control, therefore no slappings. And obviously, as Chelsea fans, there have been games where we've been slapped. I think even recently, the Real Madrid game with the Benzema, I think I know it's Real Madrid, so it's a different level. We're talking about even being worried about Brentford. So maybe it's just a different level, but I kind of wanted to get your opinion on that. We want to start with Buzzy, because I know, if just to give a little bit of context, I know you seem to be an objective person, but you're not necessarily sold on Jorginho. So yeah, give me your thoughts on what I've just described.
Yeah, I'm not always sold. I think his performances this season have been a little more up and down. I think he's had more visibly poor games than maybe he had in the past. But I was also, to give him credit, looking at the games he started in, and we really, like, it's mostly wins and some draws. I think regardless, I think the main takeaway is really, it's more about the team setup, is regardless of where exactly you land on his individual performance level or ability, the way we set up is having him with that skill set in general as that role is important for the way we play. We've seen a lot of, like, Kovacic and Loftus-Cheek pivot pairings, and them kind of both getting forward has left us pretty exposed. So I think a natural sitter and a person to cycle possession and be safe with it, even if you're losing a bit of the expansive play or a little bit of attacking outlet, it, you know, is still worth it. I think we're a little more stable, or the system is just made kind of for that. So it lacks when it's missing. It's kind of visible that we don't play as well, or don't really control the game as well. There have also been times Jorginho has played and we haven't been good. Exactly. So it's not a guarantee, exactly. Obviously, but
exactly.
You know, it's better. It's more often than not better when he is in that role. So okay. I have to give him that.
And then I love it when you say you have to relax.
Give him that.
But would you say there's anyone in our current squad that can also do that role for us? Or do you think currently, just with the players we have, it's Jorginho that can do that role?
I think it's mostly him. I think players can do aspects of that role, but not all of it. Or if they can do it, their inclination is still to get more forward than he does, or to look to dribble, or to look to drive, because that's just kind of the profiles we have. Like Kovacic, Loftus-Cheek, even Kante, they prefer to run or get forward with the ball. And Jorginho gets up there sometimes, but that's not really what
Kante in his head is the Black Zidane. Babs, what's your thoughts on this whole Jorginho makes us better defensively, we control, etc.?
I feel like it's a bit of confirmation bias, if that's the right term, because you know people have like an idea in their head and it's like, you know, this is the best way to play, this is the only way that can work, and then when it happens, like, oh, see, you know, I told you so, you know. I guess we can call it I told you so analysis. I mean, that's the title of the pod. But yeah, I feel like people get in their bag, but I do agree with them in some aspects that Jorginho does give you that that control, in terms of the fact that when the game is played and he can bring it to his tempo, we will control games, you know, and we will minimize a lot of risks that are happening. It's kind of like, I feel like when games get chaotic, whereby he kind of like struggles a bit more in terms of like getting his foot on the ball and like really making things tick. But
yeah.
I do think in a game like against Leeds, whereby they press so wildly, I do think he works pretty well. because they're not going to be able to like get to Jorginho when he's playing those one touch passes or he's playing the passes around the corner. You know, he's doing that turn he loves to do. So I feel like games like this kind of do work for him in that regard, especially when there's not really much midfield quality. Not to take away from him because he did play a good game, even if it was 10 men. But you know, I do think that there is truth in what these people are saying, but yeah. I also think it's a bit of like preconceived notions are allowing people to like push through their agendas.
What I'd say is we all do it anyway. Like, so
yeah,
we all do it. Because we've said similarly in the past, we've said recently, like, oh well, every time we lose, it's like, well, if this player was in, then we would have done X. It's really more. We had this discussion on a recent podcast I was on, where like it's really more about what the team is doing and the setup. Yeah. And I agree, Babs. Like, Leeds is not the best example, like a team that can't defend or really play that well in relegation, and then they had a man sent off. Like, this one game is not going to be like, see, look what happens when Jorginho plays. But like I said, to his credit, I think we've only lost twice this season when he started a game. So
And you know what's funny, coming into the match, the commentator, I don't know who it was because I wasn't looking at the screen at the time, but he was saying that I don't forget, Lewis Bate, ex-Chelsea Academy, he started that match as well, but he was saying I fancy Leeds to get in and around because, you know, everybody knows Leeds being high intensity. And then he was saying that Jorginho is the player they need to concentrate because they fancy them getting onto Jorginho and ruffling with him because he can't handle it. My initial reaction to him, to when he said it, was that, are you stupid? Like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, the thing is, sorry to interrupt you. Like, I'm never the biggest fan of his, but even I know that it's just dumb. It's just dumb. Like, it's been proved wrong multiple times.
Yeah, it's like he's not new to the Premier League, like, and it's not a new tactic. So the fact that he thought it would be easy for them to just do that and get away with it, I thought was silly. But yeah, he had a good game. So my next question about this kind of whole Jorginho take afterwards is that we've been linked with Frenkie de Jong. We've been linked with Frenkie de Jong. Manchester United are said to be the closest. And apparently Xavi's already said, actually, I don't mind if he goes. And again, a lot of the thought process from some of the Chelsea fans is that actually, if Jorginho goes, we probably need that kind of controller that we've just said for what I think Buzzy articulated earlier. So with the whole Frenkie de Jong thing, how sold are you on Frenkie? We'll start with Buzzy, then we'll go to Babs.
I think we've spoken on him before when we were kind of judging options. Mm. I'm open to it. I don't watch Barcelona as closely, so I'm not going to speak to how well he is or isn't doing. I also think that team has been a bit of a mess, so it's a little hard to judge him fully. But that said, he was a very highly rated player who cost a lot, so it's not like you can just write all that off. I'm open to it. I don't know if that's where I choose to spend that much money, but if the alternative is spending even more money on Rice to be like the possession sort of passing player, I'm less convinced on spending 100 million on Rice. So I'm open to it. I think he's talented.
It's quoted at 60 million, and that's euros for Frenkie as well, which is interesting. Babs, what's your take on it?
You know what? There's no taking away he's a good player, but I'm not sure if he's a DM per se, you know, in that regard. Because when I have watched Barca, he's played in the eight, and obviously the reason why they do that is because they've still got Busquets, and I'll leave that to Xavi to decide if he still wants to play him there. But for some odd reason, they still do play him. But yeah, I do think he actually kind of reminds me of like a Kovacic kind of mold.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if he'd play as a six, but he obviously probably still does have the ability to play there because I don't think it's obviously just going to leave him. But I don't see if it's a thing of him coming in to play in that position or if it's him coming in and having another player to sit there.
Yeah, but, coming in because he's good versus coming
in exactly.
to replace exactly, Jorginho.
I guess there's some players where it's like, you know, this guy is so good, you bring him in and you start solving other questions later. Which has a risk in itself because we've seen how that's worked out for Chelsea in the past in terms of like doing that kind of stuff. But I mean, I think he's a good player. He's a really good passer. You know, he's. But I'm just not sure if that's the player that springs to mind as like we need him. You know, I don't know. I don't think he's better than Kovacic at this point. So I don't really see why I'd spend double what, well, not double, but like more than what it costs us to get Kovacic to bring him in. on the wages of what he's on, because he's on a madness, if you didn't know that already. So it's a bit of a risky one.
Allegedly, and this is allegedly because obviously I don't know, I can't confirm it, but allegedly they said that Tuchel cried when he missed out on him for PSG.
Don't fucking kill me. It doesn't
sound like Tuchel. I know Tuchel's not highly like emotional at all, bro. But it doesn't sound like him. But
I could have, if you told me he was angry.
Angry,
I believe that, but crying.
Yeah, if he was throwing stuff, then I believe it. But
I don't know. Where did you hear that?
Twitter's a mad place, or somewhere on Twitter. So Frankie De Jong. Okay, cool. That's your opinion there. That's fine. I agree with you in terms of, I heard from a Barcelona fan when I solicited, and don't forget, it's just one fan's opinion, but I solicited their opinion on the whole Frankie situation because I was watching Barcelona and even the commentators were saying it similar to what the Barcelona fan said, to be honest. They said that they tried him in the Busquets position, but he was terrible there. And so they've been moving him around and he played a lot of different positions, trying to find his positions. Apparently his form picked up when Xavi first came in, but even Xavi's happy to let him go.
You know what's funny as well?
Yeah.
One of the better games I saw last season, he was playing as centre back.
Interesting. It's interesting. Yeah. It's total football. These guys can play anywhere. But okay, cool.
It's one of those, like, he's technically sound. Mm-hmm. What do you do with him? Like, and we already have enough sort of a log jam. So yeah, I don't know if that would be as talented as he is. I don't know if that would be my first way to spend a lot of money.
All right, cool. So off the back of last game, Pulisic is in really good form. So at least contributions, he's making contributions. So with Pulisic, I think he played in the 10 role in the last game, and there was a goal that we scored from Werner, which looked like it was onside, but it was a Pulisic pass. And there were other, like, again, after the game from Twitter, you saw clips highlighting the fact that he was in the key passes. And then again, he scored a good goal, slid it into the far left. Nice little finish. Pulisic, his father came out talking about he's not getting enough chances. And I think directly after that, he's been playing more. So maybe that's a little indication that actually Tuchel's thinking, oh, I might lose him. Let me give him more starts. But he's been delivering. Now, he's in a weird situation, 2 years left. So again, I'm just going to kind of hot potato the convo over to you, Buzzy. So with Pulisic, what do we do with Pulisic? He's on form, but it looks like he's unhappy and he wants to go. Is it a worrying situation that we might lose another player? Like, what's your thoughts on this whole Pulisic stuff?
Yeah, it's a tough one because I think in a vacuum, I would say that's a great player to have as an option or on the bench. Like if he could turn this sort of streaky form into more consistent output. Because even when he scores, like a lot of his minutes aren't great. When Timo had his goal overturned, like that was one of his better games as far as creating like a few chances. Otherwise though, it's kind of like not doing much and then popping up with a goal, which is useful. Like, I mean, he scored the winner against West Ham. That was the only goal of the game. But it is a player you'd like to be able to throw into those situations, but without the consistency, you have a hard time starting him all the time. And if that's what he wants, those two things are on a collision course. Yeah. So I'd like to say, let's see another year of what he does. It's one of those things, right? He started the season and missed, I don't know how many, like 10 games or something. Came in, you know, subs, he scored a little off the bench, and then he got a run of starts and didn't really do much. And then back to the bench, and it's just like always up and down. And now come the end of the season, these last five games, he's popping up with a goal or an assist. So it's not someone I'm like, we don't have all these scoring options or anything where it's like we can afford to get rid of players who do actually produce. At the same time, it's a lot of minutes of mid or nothing performances in between that kind of make you frustrated and make you wonder if he's pushing for his way out, if you're better off just selling him now while his stock is high, if it's unclear.
Yeah.
High, I say, relatively high because of his age and his profile. Enough that a club would still pay a pretty good fee for him.
Yeah.
If it's worth just doing that now rather than kind of lingering on and all that. But out of our like three players we could sell or so, I'm not sure I would throw him like out the door first, unless it's clear his contract is going to become an issue. We're going to lose him for a free. I think you're better off keeping him and getting rid of like either Timo or Lukaku or Ziyech, depending what he's doing, than maybe getting rid of this young player who hopefully could develop a little more consistency. Yeah. We've seen plenty of players this age not be all that consistent, but yeah, it's a tricky one, I would say.
It's decision time though, because it's 2 years left and we don't want him to, don't forget, 58 million, so we didn't get him for cheap. So if we want to make a profit, it's decision time now. He seems like he's unhappy. I don't think he trusts Tuchel. Whenever I listen to American commentators, they don't like Tuchel.
Yeah, I can't see a new contract being signed anytime in the next 6 months. Right. There's not even enough games left to prove that he's going to be a consistent starter until next season.
Yeah.
And if you want to improve the attack, then that's going to require him getting even more bench time, maybe. So, yeah, overall, I can't really see it working out that well. And I at the same time, I'd be a little surprised if we sold him this summer.
You think so?
Not that we shouldn't. I just don't know if the club is going to seek to do that and still views him as someone we should have around and is a good young asset. Is going to try actively to get him out the door unless he actively tries to get himself out the door.
I don't think
the club is like looking at Pulisic and being like, we have to sell this player right now.
Do you think politics will come into it in terms of new American owners? You see Bruce Buck there chilling with Bowley, and this is Captain America.
I think that's definitely a bit of a factor. Even aside from the American aspect, being his age and having come for a big fee and having this sort of international profile, regardless of his performance level, sort of has a value in of itself. And the club will be a little hesitant to sell him off unless it's a crazy offer. And I don't know if we're going to get that big of an offer. So I almost think they're going to kick it down the road till he actually does have a year left and then say, well, do we sell him before it expires? Or do we try to convince him? They just did it with a couple players. I'm not saying they should, but we did just let a couple players expire because we thought maybe we could convince him to sign a contract or whatever it would be. And I don't think he's going to be someone they're going to be eager to actively try to get rid of, given all the other options in the squad that we can move on.
Yeah, I think you paint a good point about what happened with the defense. And I feel like this year is the year of the attack where there's a lot of players with 2 years. And I think they tried to make the decision, who do we keep, who do we let go in the defense? And we managed to keep everyone. And then they just all went down 1 year. So the same thing could happen. What's interesting is we're also linked with Sergiño Dest. So Barcelona are linked with Alonso and Aspi. Barcelona have the worst taste ever. But apparently they want a swap. And Chelsea, we were linked with Sergiño in January. So I tend to believe it because it seems like we're pushing through with the same links, like Koundé as well. Seems like we're pushing through that as well. With Dest, again, I asked my Barcelona friend for information. Apparently he's good attacking wise, not necessarily defending. As a wing back, it's not necessarily that concerning because you don't have to do as much defensive work. But then also they said that he can play on the right and the left, which is why Chelsea might be interested. But again, that's an American as well. But to be fair, we was interested in him before. Before I come to you, Babs, on Pulisic, a lot of times when Tuchel talks about Pulisic, the first thing he references is that the impact he can have off of the bench. And then he has to remind himself, oh shit, I can't just say that. He can also make an impact.
Other thing that's going to get him angry more than anything else.
Yeah.
That's what gets his dad tweeting, you know?
Exactly. So Babs, the Pulisic situation, is it really like a conundrum for you, or is it just actually the good form is good because it means that we can get a good price for him?
Adios. Cheerio. Ciao.
Adios.
Bye-bye. So long. Leave taken.
Sayonara.
I'm ready for him to go. I've been ready for him to go for a couple years. Go on.
I was gonna say per 90. This is what I'm saying. I'm seeing the Pulisic fans provide the facts, and I have to stand up and speak for them. I have to be a mouthpiece. Per 90, he's been our best goal scorer this season.
That's amazing. that's amazing, man. That's amazing.
It speaks to our other issues as much as anything.
That's amazing.
Else,
like, exactly. I'm not gonna say he doesn't have any value, but I just don't rate him, and I'm ready for him to just be gone. Like, I'm just tired of like the fan base that he brings. I'm tired of like the constant arguments.
There'll be other fan bases with new players.
I know, but you did. But my hope is that these fan bases, even if they do come, the players are actually worth arguing over. Like, they're actually good and consistent. Like, okay, if that's the case, then I'm calm with it. But it's not to say that he's a bad, he's like a terrible player, but I just don't really rate him, man.
Fair enough.
But if he is to go, I think it's best to get rid of him now.
Fair enough.
Buzzy, I'm not making a profit. We're definitely not making a profit on him.
You don't think so? Okay, Buzzy, you was
no complaining. Way. 58 million. Who's
paying that? I think we can. Buzzy, what was you going to say?
I remember what I butted it on. Oh God, what about to say that I responded to?
All right, we can come back to it if you remember. Okay.
Oh, I said something about him winning. I said, like, at the end of the day, he has won us a bunch of points.
He has. And the Champions League run, he was phenomenal.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to remember. You know, push come to shove, we don't have a lot of people scoring much, and his goals tend to be helpful. There are only 6 of them, though, in the Premier League. But he also missed a bunch of game time. So it's one of those things that's just like, it's always theoretical. Like, oh, well, if he could stay fitter, if he could get this form going.
It's
becoming a lot of what ifs for someone who cost a lot and who is running down years on his contract. If? That said, if you're going to face me with keeping him or Werner, I don't know. I probably would sell Timo first because he's been mostly just bad, but he's also somebody who produces. So it's one of these things.
Yeah.
But the deciding factor probably is his contract more than Timo's. So that is what it is.
Okay. All right. So who to touch on next? So maybe Mount, but to be fair, Mount's making it easy to discuss him because when it comes down to it, not necessarily a downside. Like, for someone that, again, I think he's more of a midfielder, he's hit double digits for goals and assists. The strike was great, but the all-round play was great too. I remember when Lampard was in his peak, in his youth, a lot of the games, and don't forget, this is one of the reasons why the Brexit people and all the people that are like Cobham and stuff like that, I always remember Chelsea at that time, whenever Chelsea needed someone to come through, it was Lampard, it was Terry. A lot of the time, it was either Lampard or Terry or Drogba. And I think it was just, and even for Liverpool, Gerrard would come through, and you look for Man United, the class of 92 would come through. Then you look to Arsenal, and they were always spineless. And part of the analysis at that point, I would always say is, yeah, they've got people that really deeply care, that would, you know, like John Terry put his head in the way, and that kind of whole passion thing, Arsenal fans would just dismiss, and they're like passion merchants and all that type of stuff, but they could never find a way to kind of dig deep the same way like a Liverpool would when everything was against them and Gerrard would come through for them. And the reason why I say that is that Lampard at that point, Lampard would like get a goal and assist like every other game or every third game would get like a goal and assist. And I feel like Mount isn't at that point just yet, but he's getting there. And so obviously we were all talking about coming to this game and not necessarily, even though it was Leeds and even though Leeds is in the relegation zone, Everton were in the relegation zone. And so it wasn't necessarily cut and dried, but the game was made easy by a great Mount finish. So with Mount, I don't really think there's much of a discussion, but I'm just going to throw it out to you to see if there's anything you want to say about Mount. So we'll go with Babs first.
Oh, man, what can I say about the kid at this point, man? You're just proving the haters wrong day in, day out. You know, he's doing his thing. You know, he's improving, a student of the game. A true baller. You know, he's come up from Cobham. You know, he's helped us win a Champions League. He's going to help us win the FA Cup on the weekend as well.
Yeah.
I mean, what can I say, man? Like, he's going to be here for the long run. He's going to be here to lead us to plenty of other things. Like, this is only the beginning.
The critics are saying Mason Mount scores again against another bottom six side.
Oh, man.
How
many times do we have to go? The people's golden child, Foden, 99% of his goals or assists have come against his relegation side. Well, so I do get it because I do agree that you do want involvement in the big games. But look, man, 3 points are 3 points. And if you're scoring or assisting and it's leading to goals and it's leading to wins, it's leading to goal difference, how can I complain? You know, this will come with time. You know, we've already seen him dunk on Liverpool, you know. We've already seen him dunk on Spurs. We've already seen him dunk on Arsenal. I'm talking about the Prem, you know, like, hey, listen, man, I know United, you know, Liverpool, there's more to come. Don't worry, man. Don't worry. You'll be dunking on you in the future. It's all right. Like, I do get it because it's obviously like a crutch that people will always use. is because at the end of the day, the top players performing the top games, but goals and assists aren't the only metric to perform to judge a performance. So I don't think it's the best way, because even against I think was it Arsenal? Did he get an assist against Arsenal? Oh no, he did. He did. I was gonna say, even though he didn't get an assist, he played well, but he did get an assist. So yeah, I guess that's another one of the thing. But more so for me, it's just the fact that if he's performing, I'm happy with it. But obviously, for him to get to the top level, I do agree that you would want to see more of this coming against the top teams. And when that does happen, we're going to be even more unbearable.
Do you know what struck me? The stat, youngest player for Chelsea ever to get double digits goals and assists. And the reason why it struck me is not just necessarily a mouth thing, but that...
The players we've had.
No, not even that, but... Look, he's not 21. He's 23, right? He's not like out by young players. He's not the youngest. But it just kind of struck me with how he's the youngest at 23. And like, he's been here since 20 and everybody's talking about goals and assists. And don't forget, he's a midfielder too. So he's not like a striker where you can demand like a goal every other game. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, he's a midfielder. And I just feel like no one else has really done that. Reach double digit goals and assists. So why are we so harsh on 21-year-olds and 20-year-olds and 22-year-olds, especially if they're midfielders just trying to be attackers? Why are we so harsh with these numbers? It just kind of struck me that it's never been done before, yet people expect it like they're owed it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's definitely an interesting one. But I do guess, because with me, right, I don't really like... I kind of refrain from judging a player by... his age. I'm also, I'd rather judge them by like their experience and like their exposure to the top level, because some players, obviously, some players will be 25, like a Diaz, and this is his first season in the top five league, you know. So, like, obviously, he's not young, but he's still new to the Prem and he's still new to like playing at the top level. So, I do get what your point, because obviously, like, maturity levels still obviously play a probably do part of football, but I guess it's an interesting balance between the two, if you get what I mean, in terms of like experience.
Yeah. For me, it's not necessarily using age as... I just think if something's never done before, forget age. If something's never done before, how can you use that as an expectation? Do you know what I mean? If something...
Definitely. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. And just on the kind of scoring against the small teams thing, we had that with Tammy as well. Do you know, like, when things go well for our young players, everybody's always looking at, okay, how do we critique them? Scoring against, but obviously you brought up with the Foden thing. No one really looks at that with Foden. So it seems like we're trying to find sticks to beat our players with. But Buzzy, what's your kind of whole take on this before we move on to the next round?
Yeah, first on the age front too, I think that generally is true. I think people are a little, especially when players come for big money. People always say when a young player moves for a lot, or they're speculating about it, young player moving a lot, people always comment on like, oh, well, that player's going to cost so much money because of their age. And for them, that might just mean, you know, to get that player in now, or because they're going to be here for a long time, whatever it is. But that also, like, you're paying for potential on top of it, like knowing that player might need some work and have to wait. And so these players come in for big fees. Part of the big fee is wait, is knowing you're going to wait and have them develop and what they could be even more than what they've shown. Yeah. So the expectation of, I mean, Havertz, even Pulisic to a degree, like, they are in the scheme of like the arc of a senior level player very early on. And I know Havertz scored a bunch of goals in Germany already, and that's what people want to see. So like, I get it, but it's not, none of them are finished products. And almost exactly the example with Mount, where you look, oh, no Chelsea player's ever done this, or, oh, Mount right now is the leading English scorer in goals and assists this season. Mm-hmm. Clearly a lot of players at this age are not actually doing what people insist, like you said, that they should be doing. So it's like, if someone doesn't have 10 and 10 or 15 and 15, like their second year after moving to the Premier League, having cost a lot of money, people are on their case, we should sell them, we should get rid of them. It's like, I know it's frustrating, I know we want the goals now, and I know we paid a lot, but like, have a little patience. Players do develop. If Lampard wasn't doing that, you know, then why would you expect it from anyone?
Right.
On the Mount front in particular, I will say, I did bring up the goals and assists are against some of the weaker teams thing in the Discord the other day, and I got a lot of heat, and I wasn't even, people were overly defensive in my opinion about what I was trying to get at with it. Yeah. I just think it's not a criticism, because I will obviously take those numbers all day. And especially for a player that people were demanding end product out of, who in theory is already a net gain by being on the field with his like energy and pressing and tackling and his work within the system. But if you add goals and assists on top of that, you really have no room to complain. All I was saying is the total really does look a bit better than maybe you would think if you stretched out across the whole season. I was looking at the games, because almost half, actually I think exactly half, of the goals and assists came against teams in the bottom three. So like, that is, if 11 of the 21 or whatever it was come against teams that are in relegation, that's enough to make a comment on. It's not enough to write off all the results. It's like, well, you know, the number sounds a little better, that we were beating up on the worst teams. Like, we already know Mount could perform in the championship. You know what I mean? Like, those are not the best of the best teams that he'll face. But he has also put up good games against other teams. And Mount in general for the season, I would just say, also, on the goals and assists subject, the reason I bring up the raw total looking a little better is I don't think his performances have necessarily always been as good as they were last season. And so when you only point to this bigger total, especially if a lot of them are against weaker sides where we maybe didn't need him to go crazy, then, you know, it's a little bit of room for criticism, the same way people look at Pulisic's goals and discard them because, well, he played crap for, you know, 60 of those minutes or whatever it is. Matt wasn't that bad, but he hasn't been always consistent performances. And this just throwing around this raw total of goals and assists papers over a little bit of what have been mediocre performances a lot of the time.
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of points that I wanted to mention. Number one, I think people kind of forget that when Tuchel came in last season and he moved him into these attacking twin tens, he actually got, like, don't forget, he came in about back in the January, so February. And from that period to the end, he scored quite a lot anyway. And so for me, it's not necessarily shocking that he's got this amount, just because I think it's on par with the ratio that he was going out since he's moved into attack properly since last season. That's number one. Number two is, yeah, we can talk about relegation, but everyone plays against these relegation sides, so everyone should be filling their boots. So that's why I still give him credit for it. But I think it's a good point, because we mentioned Tammy as well. Tammy, I think a similar thing happened where he scored a lot of his contributions in a couple of games, and they were against relegation or lower league sides as well. So again, like you said, it's not something we should just immediately brush off, but at the same time, you know, like, it's we can't dismiss it, when otherwise everyone will be doing it. And yeah, I think I had another point, but forget it, let's move on. I want to talk about Romelu Lukaku. I think Lukaku, I saw something really interesting from another account, and they put out that there's only three occasions that Lukaku has touched the ball more than 40 times in a match. It was this match against Leeds. It was a match against, I think it was at Brentford, and then Arsenal. And in all three games, he scored a goal. I think Lukaku's performance yesterday was great. When I talk about a fluid Chelsea, I think, whether it's down to Lukaku or not, I think he did really help coming back and being involved. It did really help with it. But I think in general, we moved the ball up the field well anyway. But that performance is, if he could give us that game to game, then we're happy as Larry. But the question is, will he give us that every single game? Now, we talk about Pulisic, who has come in and shown form. Werner, just a little bit earlier, he came in, shown a bit of form. And now it's happening with Lukaku. Now, my issue is these short bursts of forms, I don't necessarily trust any of them to carry it over a season, including Lukaku. So my question thrown out to you guys is this convincing you maybe to, because Lukaku has been linked with maybe going, but is this convincing you to maybe give it another chance for next season? So we'll start with Babs and we'll come to Bobby. Pansy.
No, not the performances. That's not what's going to convince me to give him another chance. It's more so the fact that I don't think we're going to be able to get rid of him for a respectable price that makes me want to give him another chance. And the fact that this is Tuchel signing, so he's got a die on his sword.
But if we could, like, even loan him out, would you say, no, actually, I want him to stay?
You see, the thing is, Dan, yeah? Fool me one time. Shame on you. These Italian teams and their loans, yeah? We've seen it with Bakayoko. We've seen it with Zappacosta.
Yeah.
The list goes on. I don't trust these teams when it comes to loaning. They're just going to keep...
Aren't you happy that Bakayoko hasn't been in our squad and we've been getting loan fees for him?
Yeah, I am, but
Like, I don't understand. So what would you rather?
I don't know, man. I wouldn't really compare a Bakayoko, like 30-odd million signing, to a Lukaku 100 million signing.
But it's still, if the manager doesn't work with the player, a solution can be to loan him out and make at least some of the money back by loaning them and then eventually selling them. And then, because it works out, like if we loan him for like 2 or 3 seasons, we get like 7 million per season and then we get a 40 million, then we've made a good proportion back. But I just want to forget about how difficult it is to get him out. If you could, would you do it? Or actually, do you see enough to say, actually, I still want Tuchel to work with him for another season?
You know what? It's nothing about seeing enough to think you could work from it. I'd probably have to have a gander on the market, see who's in the market in terms of strikers, because, boy, it's looking peak, man. Like, the only guy I'm really seeing that's really moving me is Lewandowski. And do you want to risk it on a 34-year-old striker, you know?
Okay, so, all right.
Buzzy. But if there was the opportunity to come up and there's a striker that we can get, then, yeah, I'd definitely move him on if he wanted to leave.
All right, Buzzy, what's your thoughts on this Lukaku form? Are you is he restoring the feeling?
A little, in the sense that I feel like, so I wasn't someone who was opposed. I think when we were looking at our options and we were going to spend even more on Haaland, that Lukaku was, as Tuchel ended up agreeing, was the best option to go for if we really felt we needed a striker. So I was okay with it. I thought he would do better than this. But I think this has sort of shown that it has been his application and that it wasn't like some insurmountable bad fit with the Chelsea side. I don't think it's as good as it was in Serie A, both because of the style Inter played and because of the league. But I think we should have seen a lot more than we have. So I think it's really been about, everyone's spoken about it. Tuchel's even spoken about it. And he did the stupid interview and he commented about it. And this whole aspect of how hard he's actually trying, and Tuchel's quotes were literally like, it's not just conjecture, because Tuchel was literally talking about like his ability to run and move. And Lukaku was saying, yeah, I couldn't press as much as I like was asked to, or like, I just was taken by surprise how much I was expected to do. Those were recent quotes. So it's really been a lot for me, even if it wasn't going to be as much of a smash hit as he was at Inter. It's been about like, if you just put the effort and execution in, I think this could be at least a lot better than what we've seen, which is really all I wanted out of the striker. And both Wolves and this game, even before he got his goal, which was like, I thought he deserved a goal from his performance last game. By the time he scored it, he was actually playing pretty well. So yes, it's not the strongest opposition, but it's a lot better than what we saw. And even when the goals aside, it was more about his application and what he was doing during the course of the game. That's what you want to see out of your striker. He was heading the ball back, he was making runs, he was moving around. Like the difference is night and day. So for me, that just means it's not a complete write-off of a transfer. That said, if a giant fee came in, like if PSG really wanted him and threw 80 million at him, I'd say, please go. We'll do something else.
What about 60?
Yeah, see, the 60, I'm like, we may as well let him, because I don't really think the season can go worse by much than it did this season. I think it's mostly upside if we try to run it again.
Buzzy, Buzzy, you're taking me back. You remind me of what you said about Werner.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Werner wasn't as bad, I would argue. He has been better, but not by a lot. Offer me
60 million, I'm snatching that.
All right, okay.
60, probably same. It depends if he really wants to go, but now he's talking about, you know, fighting and doing it next season. And I just don't think, I think realistically, yes, I would take a big chunk of money and say goodbye. I think realistically, the club is going to be hesitant to move such a big signing on immediately like that, if a team even offers the money. So I think there's a pretty good chance we see Lukaku again next season.
There's a lot of things like amortization that makes it even more difficult to do that. They have to consider that. I think they take a hit if they sell him at this point, especially for a low fee. I just want to close out on Trevor, because Trevor has been out of the team. He's another one with that Jorginho where you look at it and it's actually when he started, we're not losing. And for me, when I watch the games, even Rudiger yesterday, I feel like they're like inside. When we have Rudiger and Trevor, they're almost like inside fullbacks. And the way they can, like sometimes when I watch Saar and Alonso or Aspi and Reece James, there seems like a big chasm between the wing back and the wide centre back. But when Trevor's there, when Rudiger's there, they can carry the ball to close that. And then it's so much easier. And I feel like it's part of the reasons why we can transition the ball up. And I think he had a good game yesterday. So Keeping it short and sweet for this half anyway, before we go to the ad breaks, what do you think about Trevor?
I think especially when your alternative is Sarr, who's been mostly bad, like why isn't he playing?
I'd say quickly there, it seems like he likes Trevor on the right, not on the left. So I don't think he sees Sarr and Trevor as like competitors for a position.
Yeah, I mean, yes. But when Sarr, at the same time, when Sarr's been like actively costing us goals, I'm more willing to just put him really anywhere. And he hasn't been perfect either. He's been a little shaky at times, which I think is why he got dropped. But Tuchel's comments on him were strange too. He's like, yeah, we talked about it. He knows why he's not being picked. Like, I don't know. We don't really know what quite the full picture is going on there. But
but he had a good game.
I'd rather have him out there.
Yeah, he had a good game for you. And then Babs on Trevor before we go to the ad break.
I think his performance, you know, spoke for itself, and I definitely do think he should have been playing a lot more than he has, but I guess this is Tuchel's way of doing whatever he needs to do to get the most out of him, so hopefully it actually does work and we see a bit more of him going forward, because he has played a lot of games this season. What, 19 games out of 36, you know, for a first season? It's quite a lot when you think about the centre-backs we've got currently already, who actually led us to a Champions League, so for him to force himself in and play that many games is impressive.
Okay. All right. So we'll end that segment of the pod there. Thanks for listening. We'll be back right after we play some of our sponsors.
Hey, guys. We're back from the ad break. And let's get some listeners' questions. So first listener question from Nick. He wants to know, who do you guys think is our player of the season? I'm going to start with you, Ozzy.
That's a tough one. the last couple of years have been sort of picking from among maybe not the best options. No strong standout contender through the year, but if forced to choose, I would probably say it's between Kovacic and Mount. And I'd probably give it to Kovacic. He's missed time at times, which has been frustrating, but he's more or less been the first name on the team sheet this season. I think he's not someone, obviously, you're going to say, look at his goal and assist total, which is, you know, what Mount has going for him this year, but he is pretty much has been his best Chelsea season so far, and B has been pretty crucial in giving us something we otherwise don't have. His drives, his runs, his general overall performance of doing a lot of both ends of the ball, but particularly activating himself a little more in the playmaking and attack, which we need because nobody really else is doing it. I think have elevated him out across the average of the whole season. I think he's been probably the most consistent and best player.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. That's an interesting choice. Dan?
Hey, so I actually have an app for this, which is interesting. So for those of you that don't know, last season we did this in a Discord manually, and I was just using Google Sheets and I was collecting everybody's opinions. But this year I've got an app called Underrated, and it can help you track your opinion, because the way that, and this has become a sales pitch, by the way.
Hashtag ad, hashtag sponsored.
Hashtag. Exactly. But essentially, like if I was to ask you about a meal you tasted in the restaurant a year ago, it's probably not the best time to answer. And so when it comes to this part of the season, I think recency bias creeps in heavily, and I'm seeing names like Mount being brought up. But I can give you, so what this app does, it tracks your own opinion, but it also tracks the community opinion. And the community opinion, when I'm looking at the person with the best average rating for the season, it's Lewis Hall. But he obviously hasn't played that many games. But the player that, from the community opinion from Chelsea fans, that has had the best season is Thiago Silva. So I think this is kind of, obviously, we send a notification straight after games, people give their opinions. And so it aggregates it, and it takes into account all the performances across the season, so not just Premier League. But I think even without that, if you think about it, Thiago Silva has been ever-present. He's played way more. I think there's a couple of players that have played way more than they should have played. And Thiago Silva, the idea, I think, was to play Thiago Silva and then not as much and let Christensen play for him, because he is 37. But he's played so well and so consistently that he's been trusted more and more. And I just feel like he's been a stalwart. And there's so many games where it's just like, even like rivals are watching to see, oh, he's old, maybe we can take advantage of him. And he's, if anything, he's just like nope, like he's the one you can't take advantage of. He's been a leader. And then so he's been, according to the all the Chelsea fans on the app anyway, that our best performer. The one that comes next is Trevor Chalobah, but maybe he's not ever present. Then we've got Ben Chilwell, who's been obviously injured, and then Kovacic. So that kind of aligns with what Buzzy said. But yeah, mine will be Thiago Silva. And we're also joined by Joe. What are you saying, Joe?
I'm good. Hope all you guys are good too.
Yeah, we're just doing listeners' questions. So before I go back to Babs, Joe, who has been your player of the season for Chelsea?
That's a tough one. I'd give it to be honest, I haven't really been blown away by too many people. I'd give it to Ruben, to be honest.
Okay, it's fair. It's fair. I didn't mean to laugh. That's, listen, audience, that's not me belittling Joe's opinion. That's just my immediate response.
It's all good.
Babs, back to you.
I was going to give it to Reece James personally. I think if there's anybody who's been a standout in terms of performance-wise at the top level, I think he's been far and away the best, easily. I think he's been better than Thiago Silva as well. I think Silva, he started the season really well, and he had like a lot of highs, especially at the Juve game with the goal line clearance. But of recent, I don't know about you guys, but he's been poor. I think he's been quite poor. And for me, if anybody that I think is actually performing at the top level and like continuing to play the season, I think for me it's Reece James. I think Mount has a case for the goals and assists and, you know, the involvement in the Champions League as well. So like, he's there as well. I wouldn't give it to Kovacic because I don't think he's played enough games.
How did you give it to Reece? He missed
Reece has missed games, but I'm pretty sure he started more league games than Kovacic. And in my opinion, I think he's been better in the league.
Hold on, our stats people are pulling up the numbers.
I think he's played better than Kovacic in the league as well. So.
Which is fair, but you did bring up the games, and I think that if you're bringing
games, yeah, I mean, I can guarantee he started at least 20 games, whereas I don't think Kovacic has started more than 15.
Okay, well, Buzzy, you're on that. You're on the fact checking. Whilst we're doing that, Joe, you've got to explain the RLC thing, because I think RLC has definitely outperformed their expectations this season. But again, I just don't think that he started enough games for it. So what's your thoughts? Why did you pick RLC?
To be honest, listening to Bab speak about Reece kind of maybe put in perspective a bit. But what I will say is that for a player that at the start of the season, a lot of people weren't even expecting to get that many games. And a lot of people kind of wanted to ship off.
Yeah.
The performances he's given us off the bench in little cameos to the point that now he's a player that we need to rely on because of injuries. And he's actually carrying his own weight when a lot of players that we've had this season have looked a bit questionable. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
So for me, that's the main reason why, isn't it? He's really just come through for us in ways that a lot of people didn't expect. Yeah. Obviously, me, I expected it, but a lot of other people, they just wrote him off, innit? So that's why he's my player of the season.
Yeah.
Plus, in Babs' defense, James has made four more starts. And only for 100 more minutes total than Reece, than Kovacic, though. Yeah, so they're very, very close.
Let that one go. And also, just on the app, I'm looking at it, and Reece has, and I can't remember this because one of the reasons why I created this app, my memory is so bad when it comes to football game. I literally put it into the garbage collector as soon as it's gone. But like, it's showing that Reece has had a bad period. December against Leeds when we lost 3-2, he had a poor score, but maybe we just all had poor scores. Wolves, Brentford, Aston Villa, he had a poor, like really low. Then Brighton, he had a 4 as well, and then the Luton game. And then Brentford again, low. And obviously the Real Madrid game. I can't remember what happened there, but I remember. But yeah, so it's showing that he's had a bad period. But to be fair, it's cool. We've all had our say on that one. So Babs, what's the next question?
Okay, no worries. So next question from
us. Wow, four different answers, although, too.
Which is good.
Yeah, but it also speaks to our season. I do think Reece is a good champ, for what it's worth. I think I think I thought Kovacic missed a little less time than he did. I forgot quite how long he was out for with that injury. Reece also showed how much we missed him while he was gone. So there's that.
100%.
Cool.
And next question from C's. How many years would you give a high wage contract to Lewandowski, given he'd be 34 with the new season beginning? I'm going to start with you, Dan, on that one.
How many years will I give a contract? Really, it depends on how much we pay for him. But I wouldn't like if we was to get him on a free, really cheap, then I'd get him, but I wouldn't get him. If not, not at 34, not in this Tuchel system where we want people to press high. Do you know what I'm saying? We can't complain about Lukaku's lack of movement and then bring a 34-year-old as a long-term solution. So, like, I remember we had Eto come in and Drogba come back at that age. And so if he was to come in, it'd probably be a very short-term solution like it was for Eto and Drogba. So, yeah.
I don't know if I'd agree, because if you look at the way Lewandowski's been, I mean, I think he's in a lot better physical shape than those two were when they did come in at that age.
I think Drogba has been, like, Drogba's always been a physical specimen. Do you know what I'm saying? So I don't necessarily think, and to be fair with Eto too, like both of them have been lean players. And I think with Lewandowski, look, no one's saying that he's not someone like Zlatan. He keeps in shape, but it's just like, I think it's lazy, to be fair, to make that a long-term option at 34. Do you know what I'm saying? Especially for a striker in Tuchel system where you have to be running around.
Okay, so you're saying not long-term, but would you get him a short-term contract then?
This is what I'm saying, if it's cheap. Like, I'm not paying loads of money for him. Sorry.
Yeah, I hear it. Next question from Prash. Do you guys think Tuchel made a conscious effort to work with Lukaku, or do you think it's just a quality of opposition? I'm going to start with you, Joe, on that one.
Is that for the season overall?
Do you think he's made a conscious effort to work with Lukaku, or do you think he's just a quality of a position in the recent?
I do think a bit of both, really, because from watching the last game, I could see that Rom, obviously himself, physically looks better than he did like midway through the season. And yeah, like, I feel like we're trying to find him more early in midfield, and like with our wing backs, we're trying to make sure that we pick him out more, because I feel like that's what he's been crying out for all season. So I do think it's a bit of both. Like, obviously the opposition we faced haven't been amazing, but at the same time, we've lost to not that great opposition. We literally lost to Everton. So it's like, I don't really think the opposition matters. It's just about how he applies himself, and as well with the tactics that we do use. So yeah, I do think it's been a bit of both.
Definitely fair. Other question from Prash. Thoughts on Boehly? I'm going to have to come over to you, Barty, on that one, for no reason in particular.
Yeah, why is that? It's just why, no specific question on Boehly?
I think Prash was talking just in general, like, about his the Major League Basketball model that he's had with the Dodgers. I guess what you think he could bring to.
Yeah, so I mean, there's an optimistic side and there's a sort of pessimistic side, right? So in general, you look at the Dodgers, his part ownership in the Dodgers, which he's not fully responsible for, but the majority owner of the Dodgers did join the bid theory. So you can rightly attribute their success. I think that's probably fair at this point. If you look at them, they're a team, and he's done talks where he's spoken about this, where he thinks that spending and winning are great ways is to make your team bigger, make your team more successful, make your brand bigger, which is what fans want to hear, right? You don't want to hear someone who's talking about just purely marketing, purely taking out the value and just kind of coasting on the level of the club that already exists. People are seeing them and they're fearing, you know, the United approach and the Glazer approach, and then the Kroenke approach with Arsenal as well. So there's good and bads, because then you look at Liverpool, which is what they're hoping this mirrors because of his involvement with the Dodgers and because he's spoken on data analytics and scouting and kind of stepping up our setup in that regard, which is an area we could use improvement. And that's where people are optimistic, where we take a more data-driven approach and analytics approach and say, okay, where can we improve? Where can we more efficiently use our resources and sort of build in this more organized approach and buy these players who are maybe undervalued or who aren't stars yet, instead of just spending money on hit and miss transfers on big names. So that's the idea. I mean, it's nicer in theory to say that it'll work out exactly like that. We obviously don't know. There's the aspect of the fact that he's backed by Clear Lake, which is, you know, private equity, and they can't, I believe, sell their shares for 10 years. So they're not going to be able to turn it into a quick cash out. And Chelsea also isn't profitable. So it's not one of those things where it's like, well, they're going to coast on us. We're not making money right now. They have to make us do that first if they want, if that's purely their game plan. So between those protections we put in place, which people have been calling the anti-Glazer clause, so we don't end up in the same situation as them, There's reason to be optimistic. And I think, I know people miss Roman kind of the ideal owner in a vacuum as far as spending money, not asking questions and not getting involved beyond just wanting to win and spending unlimited money. All was great, obviously. Brought Chelsea a lot of success. In a modern game, a lot of teams have money and there's a lot of room for improvement on spending well and spending efficiently. So since the Roman thing has to happen and we don't have a choice, it's not a choice between keeping Roman and moving on to this group, right? Roman's going either way. So you have to look at it and say, okay, well, that period was good, but it is gone no matter who we'd rather be the owner. And there's reason to be optimistic and hope that this could, if not be better, I mean, maybe it turns out better, but could also be good in its own way. So we hope we see some smart buys. We hope they put the people in charge who know what they're doing and run a football club, which is something that he's spoken about with the Dodgers as well, getting the people to run the team that you trust rather than pretend you know everything and try to just dish out money to names you've heard of. That's the kind of thing we hope doesn't happen. You just chase names. And so if people are in place, maybe Cech and Marina stay in place and they can continue to do their job and work with him and work with the ownership group. Hopefully we see success. There's a lot of variables, so no one's going to pretend to know, have all the answers, but there's reason to be optimistic.
Yeah, just quickly, I'll chime in on this. So I think when people talk about the data approach and et cetera,
I think there's a bit of a romanticism about that, you know?
Okay, you say what you want to say first.
Yeah, I'll let you go, actually. I'll let you go first.
Okay, cool. So essentially, I know that people look to Liverpool using the data approach and all of this type of stuff. Actually, I think Chelsea was one of the first to take a data approach. We had a guy called Michael Ford, and this is one of the reasons why we signed Daniel Sturridge. They identified from the few matches that he played under Man City that this is someone that Michael Ford talked about, but he just came out in terms of English talent. It kind of showed his potential, and we went on to see what he could do. But obviously, this was way before a lot of teams even had a data department. The only reason why I mention it is when people said, like, we want to take a smarter approach, it's almost with the idea that we haven't been data led. Now, the reason why I want to mention that is because there's loads of teams now using, since Moneyball, that are using statistics departments and that are data led. It's not just about trying to be data led, but actually finding the right model. So you're identifying the right players. And so essentially, when we were linked with Bowley, they said apparently we were wanted to get Paul Mitchell, who I think it looks like he's going to United. I think he's actually a Man United fan. He's a Mancunian. And he's been with the Red Bull guys. And I think a lot of people have heard that. I think he was responsible for the likes of Nkunku and then other players. So it's interesting. For me, it's interesting. Obviously, it's a different approach. Whenever you bring in new people, they're going to kind of slightly change things. It's interesting to see how it manifests. But I always just kind of caveat when people say, we're going to take a data approach. It's like, yeah, we've probably been doing that already.
Yeah, I was going to say, I agree. I do think, I don't know, I feel like people say that, but I think what people may mean is that they want cheaper signings that are going to be hits, if that makes sense. Like, I think that's what people really want.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any way that a top club like Chelsea aren't using data in their analysis.
They are. So what I've heard, to combine your two points, what I've heard is Chelsea's approach. They were, as Dan said, one of the first teams to do that, but they're still sort of using the same system and literally the same software that they use back then as they do now. And basically, it has come a long way since then. And clubs have a lot more people doing more modern approaches. They've hired on more people. It's really, especially the past 5 years, this has really blown up, Chelsea's sort of still holding on to a relatively basic way of doing it, and needs to sort of modernize the way they're doing it a bit. And I think no one would argue that our scouting has been a little questionable.
What I'd say is interesting, though, because I know people talk about our scouting, but I just feel like when it comes to Chelsea and talent ID, I always find it really interesting because this is talent ID throughout the organization. One of the reasons why people talk about La Cobham is because of the talent ID at a younger level. Now, number one, we've got more money to throw at these young players as well. So that's another thing. But there's a reason why we have a lot of the best talent. It's because of the talent ID from the young ages. And then when people talk about, we fucked up Salah, we fucked up KDB, we fucked up all of these players, there's a reason for that. Again, there has been good scouting along the way. So whereas everybody just wants to rubbish it, but we can only lose good players if we're finding good players. And I just want to give that kind of other side to it. But I do agree in terms of, obviously, technology, you have to keep up. From what I've heard, when they're talking about the software that is outdated, that's used more for internal scouting. Because I know Emmanuel talked about that software. I'm not sure if you're talking about that's the same software, but yeah, they're still using the same software for their internal scouting. I'm not sure if they're, because I know that there's a third party software that a lot of like Y Scout, and there's other ones, but yeah, for the scouting thing, I'm super interested to see what direction it could take. I'm not necessarily someone that thinks straight away they're going to come in and it's going to be all this glitz and glam, but yeah, I'm super intrigued to see how it's going to go.
Yeah, that's the optimistic long-term sort of approach. When's the last time you think, not to make this too long, but that we've scouted, because we mentioned the Salah, the KDB, that I feel like that was the last time we really found players that weren't on other teams' radars yet, was that era, and that was kind of a while ago.
We were interested in Tchouaméni before everybody else. Mm-hmm. We were interested in Cucurella under Lampard. Do you know, like, Barella? Do you like, this is what I'm saying. So, in terms
of... that's true. The last few years it comes out, oh, Chelsea actually was tracking him all along. And
yeah. So,
Havertz too, apparently, supposedly.
And what the reason why I bring that up is because scouts can't make the club buy players. Mm-hmm. So, in terms of execution and who, like, the manager might say, actually, just get me Lukaku. But that doesn't mean that the scouts are at fault, because the scouts are presenting options. I always see Chelsea first on the scene for a lot of good players.
This is true. The last time we scouted and acted on a bunch of young talents was when we got all those Belgian players, you know, before anyone really.
And that's not necessarily about the scouts; it's more about who's making decisions.
Who's making decisions to buy them? Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that's a good place to end the podcast, though. So. I guess.
Good one.
Yeah, thanks for joining.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers, guys. Good to have you.
Peace. Love.
To find a way through! Oh, that is magnificent! Magical from Eden Hazard!
May just
brilliant run by Emma! Oh, that is absolutely phenomenal!
That's more like Kante. You do threads on Twitter and ranting. Doing the most. True say that money is power, so when you get money, keep quiet and ghost. Ghost. I remember when I shot my shot, but I didn't have guap, so I hit the post. But next time it's a golden goal. And it
Sports Social Podcast Network.